Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line 1, your health connection in KSKA, on KSKA Anchorage. We're originating from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guests today are Prentice Pemberton. He's a licensed clinical social worker, and Lori Hickman, a licensed professional counselor, both of Bridges Counseling Connection here in Anchorage. Our topic today is going to be overuse of technology and the internet and Facebook and video games and you name it, and its effect on us, our family, and our society. If you've got questions or comments, feel free to give us a call. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. We also have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and an email address. All of these are available to you to reach us during the next hour. The email address is line1. That's L-I-N-E-O-N-E, all one word, no spaces, at alaskapublic.org. Line1 at alaskapublic.org. Prentice, welcome back.
Thank you.
Nice to have you back again. And Lori, nice to meet you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Prentice, why are we here?
Well, that's a broad question. I think we're here to discuss the use of the internet and media, different media outlets and video games, and that's one of the things that that I continue to see in my practice is particularly parents worried about video games and spouses concerned about their, you know, their partner's use of Facebook or too much time texting, or they're just disappearing from the relationship. So lots of things going on.
Laura, you agree?
Absolutely agree, yes.
All right. Same group of people, you know, parents, teens, couples.
Parents, teens, couples.
That's the primary issue.
Primary, yes.
What are we talking about in the way of technology? We started this as thinking about electronics, but it's really technology, of which electronics is a huge part of it. So what kinds of technologies do you see most commonly getting people into talking to you guys about things?
I would say overuse of internet and smartphones, mm-hmm. the amount, how it's available 24/7.
The other thing that, excuse me, I see all the time is the TV is still a major problem, and that has been, you know, one of the things since TV came out. I remember, you know, one of the first fights I remember as a child was my mom and dad arguing about TV time, and my dad picking up the TV and dropping it on the ground and it blowing up, and he said, "There's no more problem," right? And that solved that problem, but it's not that simple anymore. There's, you know, you're connected by so many different avenues and so many different streams of information and stimulation, and I think the problem is just going to continue to compound and get bigger and bigger as kids evolve in this under this sort of this environment.
Forgot about TVs.
Yeah, that's on the back burner, but it's still a big one.
I would have to say, I wonder, there's probably been a marked decrease in TV use in the last 5 or 6 years. I have never even thought about that.
Amongst the younger population, for sure.
Well, yeah. They tend to go to YouTube now or surf the web or those websites. So
what's the allure? Why? What's the deal?
I think there's lots of different reasons. I think one of the biggest things is an escape. From our lives, from the daily grind, the ease at which you can access pleasurable activities that impact the brain in a positive way, connecting socially with friends. And, I mean, it's just so easy to do and to engage in this behavior.
So there's multiple reasons for it, is what I'm hearing you say.
It's not a simple answer.
From just socialization needs to boredom to stimulation for various and sundry reasons.
Well, for a good example is somebody with an anxiety disorder now may be able to connect with a whole like world of people and friends and network and even begin to date. You know, I had one person with an anxiety disorder that actually ended up getting married to somebody they met online. So it's not all negative. I mean, that's the...
Well, I think that's an important point. I was about to point out, I mean, it's... Everything's got positive and negative. I mean, one of the things I try to get people to talk to me about when they talk about treatments of any sort is that it's not issue of what's the risk of the treatment, what's the risk of not doing the treatment, and that there's always pros and cons of all these things. And you, and so the oftentimes patients are asking me what I think is the wrong question. There is no risk-free treatment as much as we'd like to find that. Laurie, you find in the same situation then, the same reasoning, I guess, or reasons that people are, do you have any other thoughts about different reasons you think people are attracted to these technology? I mean, it's almost universal. It's not 100%, but it seems like it's, I guess it's as ubiquitous as the TV was or the radio was when it came on.
Right. It also gives people an opportunity to try on roles or personas, characteristics that they don't feel comfortable doing face-to-face in real time. They do it behind the screen, and they sometimes get to practice that or be more comfortable because they're not face-to-face with someone. So it's outlets for aggression sometimes. They're finding sometimes, you know, teabagging is a word that goes through gaming a lot, where you kind of brag about killing someone through a gaming and kind of brag and stand on top of that character. And they find instead of actually physically hurting someone and feeling reward from that, they're finding that, you know, doing it through a game sometimes is an outlet for aggression. So,
there's lots of different reasons. Good thing, in a sense.
It can be good, but it can be bad. So it depends how much it's happening and where it takes them.
So. Well, let's explore this good and bad aspect that you brought up a minute ago, Prentice. What else would you have to say about that? I kind of jumped in and said, yeah, that's one of the things that comes to my mind. But
I would say is that it's a chicken or the egg thing, is there, which is what a lot of this stuff is. Is it an outlet for aggression, or is it helping to create more aggressive behavior? And that's sort of something that I don't think we know the answer to, but it does. There is a problem with a lot of violence in the games, which is one of the things I hear from parents all the time, trying to restrict their kids' access to violent games or adult games. There's all sorts of sexuality depicted in these games. And obviously the internet has access to pretty much whatever you want.
I want to come back to that violence and sexuality and evidence that is really true and see what you guys have to say. But we do have a caller. Let me just take Keith. Keith, you're on line one.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. When you opened the program, I heard you mention TV, and everyone laughed. Yeah, we forgot all about that one.
Right.
I'm with you 100. I tossed my television in the dumpster about 20 years ago because I realized that I was trying to go to school and get some good grades at college here. And I realized that if I turned that TV on to watch the news, then I would watch MASH. And that would be I wasn't going to do any homework whatsoever. So I exerted some self-discipline. I unplugged the TV, got rid of it, and haven't really missed it very much since. Recently, I got an internet connection, and I've been introduced to email and Facebook. And I've discovered that Facebook has the very same effect on me.
Hmm.
I can check in to, you know, say hi to somebody, see what somebody's up to. I'm only going to spend 5 minutes, and then I'm going to go balance the checkbook. Well, 2.5 hours later, I'm finally turning it off. The checkbook is not balanced, and I've been a turnip again for the last 2.5 hours. And I'm not going to throw my computer in the trash, but I'm seriously thinking, you know, how can I possibly set up my computer so that I can only log into Facebook for an hour at a time every 24 hours?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not computer literate enough to do that, but
right.
I'd love to hear if I could do that somehow.
Right. So your issue is, I think you brought up you brought up a number of issues. One of the things that comes to my mind is the importance of the self-discipline idea. That we kind of talked about in the studio here before we went on the air. Let me ask Laurie and Prentice to comment on your thoughts.
What I see, what you're describing, is a very common issue. People, you know, intend to have the best intentions of going on and, you know, checking up on people, but you kind of get in that time warp and lose time, and you end up spending hours. I'm not tech savvy, so I don't know if there's any way to time the computer to turn on or off, but it is about self-discipline and moderation and, you know, setting your own individual goals to, is this hurting me or is this, you know, some benefit to myself, and how do I, you know, figure out a way to handle that.
You dated yourself a little bit with the news and the MASH comment, because MASH hasn't been on for quite a while. But I would, you know, I'm sure there is a way to set your computer to turn off at certain intervals. But short of that, it might be easier just to sort of try to modify your own behavior with alarms, or setting, you know, your phone alarm to go off at a certain time, just to remind yourself of what you're trying to do and how you're trying to use that technology in moderation, because moderation seems to be the optimal word when we're talking about any of this stuff, from TV to Facebook to, you know, the internet activity. And people can get lost in there because there just is so much.
That's true. I'm immune to some of my, I have an old Nokia cell phone that, it was through the art because it actually sent text messages when it came out, and it doesn't do any, it doesn't browse the internet or anything, and I'm really glad for that.
Yeah, stay away from the smartphone.
No, yeah, I do not need one of those things. All right, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for your call. Let me remind listeners, once again, we're talking about technology dependence and addiction. We're going to define some of these terms here a little bit, maybe in a second, but the effects of new technology that is having on our families, ourselves, and our society. You can reach us at 550-8433 during the next 45 minutes or so. That's 550-8433, our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. There's a lot of pathways that lead away from this topic. And you mentioned the issue of violence and the exposure to sex. And I think it's almost become a given that if kids watch violent video games, that's a problem. My reading of the pediatric literature is that it's interesting that is felt to be true when you read American researchers. When you read European researchers, they don't find exactly the same stuff. So we have biases that creep into the best science. What are your feelings about this? What do you guys know that maybe I don't know?
I don't know, but European researchers may find similar differences among alcohol, like if they do research on alcohol and consumption at an earlier age, which would be an interesting
thing. So it's culture that interferes with what we're trying to understand.
I think culture plays a big part in it, and it comes back to the question of is there a predisposition to violent behavior, and then those games bring that out, because there's lots and lots of people that watch violent movies and grow up playing violent video games that do not become violent people.
Right.
They're very
right.
peaceful and right. compassionate and understanding, and they know the difference between reality. And so,
and it's probably less the minority that really grow up with violent behavior and also just happen to watch video games. Most people who watch violent stuff never become violent.
If you dig further into their lives and their histories,
right.
for violent people, there's usually some significant trauma, childhood witnessing of violence. I mean, there's all sorts of other things that go into play.
So you get to the chicken and egg issue again.
Way
right?
too simple to right. just say, well, they play modern warfare and learn to shoot people and that people die and then they get back up. You know?
Is the same thing true about the sexuality that's so prevalent, at least in our culture, or how we interpret sexuality in our culture versus, say, the French or the Swedish or the English or the Germans or the Japanese?
The same debate. I mean, in Europe, nudity is quite acceptable, and topless beaches and advertising and all that stuff. And so, I mean, careful. I mean, the exposure of young minds to violence and intense sexuality, my personal opinion is I don't think it can be good. But that's that's something. Is it the cause and effect thing? I don't know that we have the answer to that or will for a long time.
What is, back to this technology issue, what's normal, what's abnormal? Let's start working towards what's addiction, and I'm going to start by just saying what's normal and what's abnormal. How can we ferret that idea out first?
I think it's important to look at, you know, how is it affecting one's life? That would be defining whether it's abnormal or normal. If it's affecting one's life or impairing it in some way, I would think that's more abnormal use versus if it's enhancing one's life, it could be more considered normal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, the common psychological, psychosocial answer I get is if it begins to impair your day-to-day activity in some way, then it's beginning to creep into abnormal. I'm not saying it exactly right. But.
Yeah, I mean, the definition of addiction, and do we call it addiction or not? But it's, well, one definition, there's several definitions, but the one that I like the most is that it's something that impairs or causes negative consequences in your life, yet you continue to do that behavior or drink that drink or consume that substance despite the negative consequences. Mm-hmm. So it's a compulsive sort of addictive thing. And like Lori said, if your life is balanced and there's, you know, good socialization and there's exercise and nutrition and family time and work time, and then you also look at Facebook for 30 minutes a night to connect with your friends and family, it's great. If you're doing it at work for 4 hours a day, if you're coming home and spending 6 hours playing WoW, and you know, which is World of Warcraft, and not spending time with your children, then I think it moves into that sort of problematic, dysfunctional behavior.
There's also the added dimension in certain drugs, at least, I'm thinking, and maybe there's others, where there is more of a true physiologic issue. Now, this I'm saying with some caution, because as we're beginning to understand the brain, you know, we may have chemicals that are very similar to what we measure in somebody with physiologic addictions to heroin or alcohol or something that are happening, yet when someone stops or is told or has to stop using the internet, they're not going to have delirium tremens like an alcohol or withdrawal from heroin. So where's this physical? So again, it gets kind of hard to dissect the differences, but there are clearly some differences when we use the term addiction to chemicals in particular, as opposed to what we're talking about here, it seems like.
With the devices, I see it's often more instant gratification. It feels good to get a text from someone. It feels good to get that email. It feels good to have your phone chime and know someone's thinking about you or has a question for you. So there's some gratification and reward with it, but I'm not sure if it affects in the same parts of the brain as a substance would or not.
Right. Yeah, the caller earlier mentioned the self-discipline, the self-gratification issue, and that issue seems to come up at least in some of the pediatric literature that I'm reading about is an important characteristic to instill in children is the ability to put off gratification, to get something done that needs to get done without getting distracted, that has a lot to do with success, well, what we define as successful life outcomes is the ability to do that. And maybe this implies all these problems that we don't have that. We've lost that self-discipline.
I think, discipline is the key to a lot of things and to success in life, however you define that. But I think everybody defines that separately. But I think this stuff, the addiction piece, the science that we're starting to discover with the brain is really intriguing, and how similar a person who looks at the internet, you know, X amount of hours a day, and a heroin addict's, you know, brain looks similar as far as the pleasure centers and how the electrical activity inside the brain mm-hmm. lighting up is very similar. So mm-hmm. there's lots of science that indicates that there is a reward sort of process going on chemically with behavioral, you know, quote unquote addictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I looked into some of this stuff that, you know, and as we understand the brain now, anytime you do any activity, you're re-emphasizing a certain neurotransmitter tract or something. And, you know, so if you're going to learn to throw a baseball correctly, or the more you do it, not only the bigger that tract is, we can look at certain tracts in kids who are learning to play the piano, and those tracks are bigger in those kids in objective ways we can measure than later. And also it becomes more less likely to make mistakes, I mean, in the transmission along those lines. So in that sense, if we're spending more time on the internet or playing games or texting, we are emphasizing certain cognitive circles or neurologic circles, but we're also less emphasizing other things. We're not exercising, we're not socializing, which we haven't gotten into.
Yeah, so what happens to the developing brain when it's not throwing a baseball and when it's not socializing, when it's not, when it's sitting in front of a screen, you know, 6 to 8 hours a day, which is not uncommon for kids that I see these days. And as you know, that's way, way outside the recommended amount of screen time, I guess, is what they call it. But yeah, I think in the next 20 years, we're going to see all sorts of mental health issues from many of these media devices that people overindulge in and don't have balance in their lives.
Bill, you're on line one. What's your comments?
Okay, I just wanted to say real quick that we're really dinosaurs discussing mammals, because these kids, I already know of a couple of three-year-olds who can log on. And, you know, they're going to run this world through that new medium. Regardless of what we're trying to analyze, they're going to grow up in it and have such a different understanding of it that I think the best we can do now is encourage them to see some shutdown time, green plants and white snow, and be out and be away from it for given periods, and to know that that teaches their brain to be more effective in the new media, not that they're losing time from the screen.
So what? Yeah, what I'm hearing you say is that the stuff is here to set, here to be. We're not going to change this, but how can we make it advantageous and use it to educate kids to live the rest of their life appropriately and not let it overtake and control them, so to speak.
Correct. Let them understand that this is their world. They're so far advanced and going to be so far advanced over what we have, but they are monkeys with hand grenades, you know. It's just a matter of time before they get the pin out if they don't learn some other controls.
Yeah, I've heard the younger generation called digital natives and our older generations called digital immigrants, that the natives are going to be spending a lot more time on the technology and knowing how to use it and be really fast and good at it, where we're still struggling. So there's a generation gap, and one of the things to connect with is, you know, with the family, is the younger ones helping the older generation and, you know, catching up, and the older ones helping that moderation.
Or even the point that my long-term theory, I'll just give you one word, is that they are meshing with this technology. Their brains aren't just using it. They are becoming, they are incorporating it into the human nature, which to us is still an outside force.
Okay, good. Thanks for your comments, Bill.
Yep. Bye.
Appreciate them. When we were talking about addiction, and I read some of the, or went to some of the websites that you guys had given me about to get some information on this, which, by the way, those who are listening, if you go to Line 1 or AlaskaPublic.org or AlaskaPublic.org and hit the, go to the Line 1 link, you will see some links to this program, which will get you some more information about this whole issue of being media-wise, let's say, this time when I talk about it. But apprentice, back to the issue, one of the things I was reading about when I was getting into this was the addiction between, or the discussion about addiction, and then it brought up, you know, examples of what's a compulsion, what's a passion, and the differences, which I think really raise some interesting questions in my mind. So someone who has a passion for computers versus a dependence or an addiction or an overuse, or and then somebody may have a compulsion to feel like they need to do Facebook. So explain the differences to me.
Yeah, I think a passion is something that you want to do, and a compulsion is something that you need to do. It's the difference is that compulsion creates anxiety, and it's sort of like winding up a spring, and the tension just gets created tighter and tighter and tighter, and then it requires release. And a passion is more that something that you engage in, it brings you joy, it drives energy, it generally helps or brings about some sort of art or beauty. And compulsions and addictions are more negative and tension and anxiety creating.
The other difference is a passion is usually towards a positive goal or a positive outcome. Mm-hmm. And with a passion, you can usually stop and moderate. With a compulsion, it's difficult to do so.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard the anxiety thing on that. That got me thinking about some things that I do. If it creates anxiety, it may be more of a compulsion, whereas something you have a passion for doesn't cause any anxiety. Laura, you believe that?
Yeah, I would see that.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, too. I'd never heard that.
I mean, think about compulsive overeating. I mean, it's this buildup, this anxiety, this need thing, and then you get it, and there's this satiation and this wash of relief and the yummy, good fat foods, and, you know, it just washes over you. And then it's followed up by guilt and, you know, I shouldn't have eaten that. I know better than that. It's just crazy. And then the cycle just goes in a circle over and over again.
So somebody who's got a passion for drawing and painting, and I'm Picasso, I don't ever have any anxiety about the fact that that's my whole life, that's all I do?
No, you get inspired. You go out and you sit and you paint the sunset and you look at the birds and it's all beautiful and you connect with God or whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh. So there are differences.
I think so. I think there's clear differences.
And ones, some of them are positive, and the real difference is the positive, negative, and is it really creating anxiety in your life? You should really re-examine that.
I don't know of any compulsive behavior, and I could be wrong. Somebody could call and correct me, but that is really appreciated and embraced in somebody's life. I mean, if you think about kleptomania, nymphomania, all these like things that were created in a workaholic, shopaholic. I mean, people who compulsively do things, there's just so much anxiety involved with it. I mean, the people who go shopping and then spend all their money and then take it back and then, you know, but then have regret and remorse over taking it back. And I mean, these are conversations I have every day. Mm-hmm. And they are compulsive and they are very uncomfortable.
And as I commented before we came on air, we were talking about this a little bit. It seems to me to really clarify whether it's a passion or a compulsion, you really have to get to know the person. It may seem from the outside that someone who has a compulsion to draw or do art is, you know, hiding from socialization or whatever. But really, it's their passion. And so, I mean, as a therapist or someone who's trying to understand these people, it seems like it really is imperative to be sure what the motivation is and what their feelings are as a result of this. Does that make sense? I mean, that's my thought talked about this beforehand.
I think you have to draw the line again. Does the passion start to impair other responsibilities in your life? If you're a parent and you're an artist, but you're not taking care of your kids, that becomes a problem. So you just still have to watch, is there impairment or problems that exist within the passion? So you still have to kind of evaluate it on an individual case.
Okay.
One of the best words I think that comes to mind is pathos, like pathological. And pathos is, if I'm correct, it's like suffering or illness or disease. Mm-hmm. And so if something is a pathological, like pathological gambling, hypersexuality, pathological sexual acting out, and we throw these terms around, but does it create pain and suffering and discomfort? And if it does that, then it's more compulsive, addictive type behavior than passion.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection. In Anchorage, our number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back taking any calls and emails. We're talking today with Prentice Pemberton and Lori Hickman. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Line 1, Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Our guests today are Prentice Pemberton and Lori Hickman of Bridges Counseling Connection here in Anchorage, and our topic has been the overuse of technology and the Internet and et cetera, and its effects on ourselves, our family, and our society. If you've got questions or comments, you can reach us in a couple of ways over the next 25 minutes or so. Line 1 is our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Our phone number locally, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And please remember, you only got about 25 minutes to call and make comments or ask questions. If you're listening on KSKA, between 7 and 8, you're listening to a recorded rebroadcast, and we won't be able to answer your questions. Here's a email. It says, is there any correlation between higher electronic use, assuming you know, Internet, video games, and so forth, and less ability to read in college or adulthood? So are we able to demonstrate a loss of some abilities that we cherish or think is important in our culture from the use of this, and particularly reading? The question is.
I don't know the answer to that question as far as like any research studies or any long-term sort of studies that have measured the outcome. But I would say it goes back to the balance, you know, question. Are kids in my practice? I see a lot of young people who are immersed in and so deeply into this stuff that they don't have a lot of time for goals and thinking about their future and planning for college. I mean, they're you know, interested in 16 hours a day of video games or texting, and it gets in the way of life. So if you're not functioning well, then I would imagine you would have some difficulties moving to the next level and independence. And I think that's the big concern for overuse versus balanced use. Because Bill made a good point. This is not stuff that's going to go away, and it's not stuff that we really understand the long-term implications, but the next generation is going to grow up with it, just like we did with the telephone and the automobile.
Okay. Another email that's asked about your opinions about what age a child should have a cell phone and how should it be limited.
An age for a telephone. That's a tricky question. Depends what the use is for. I think parents are now using it more and more for, you know, staying in contact, knowing where their kids are, emergencies. On average, I start to see junior high kids starting to carry cell phones. And I guess it's what's the purpose of the cell phone? I think that's what you need to consider. Is it for them to socialize, to get on games? And then for starting out, start with limits. Know that it's a privilege to have the phone. It's not a accessory. It's not a necessity. It's for them to use for certain reasons, and set timelines, have them turned off at night. I would actually remove them from their rooms. Those are just some basic things to consider.
I think a lot of it depends on the kid. I mean, you have to, if you're parenting all your kids the same way, you're not doing it right. So kids have different personalities. Is your kid doing well in school? Are they getting up for school? Are they independent with their hygiene and their, you know, are they getting out and socializing? Are they living well? And if they are, then I think along with that comes a lot of responsibility and privileges and certain things. But I work with so many people that it's just these kids have, you know, they come in with their iPhone 4 and, you know, or their other smartphone device, and they're getting all F's or a couple of D's, and, you know, they're not coming home on time. And I ask the parents, like, why is this kid walking around with a $400 phone? It just doesn't make any sense to me. So depends on your child, I think, a lot. But yeah, I've seen 6-, 7-, 8-year-olds run around with phones, which seems a bit a bit early to me.
When I was thinking about this topic, I always like to think about putting things in some kind of perspective, and it made me wonder, we might be, here's how I'll get into this question. We might get upset if people are sitting around at a coffee shop, you look around and everybody's looking at their cell phones and messaging and so forth. But what if they were all reading a book? Is it possible that as books replaced oral histories as a way to communicate and expand our understanding, people then said, wow, what a lousy thing a book is, you know? And then we got radios, and then we got TVs, and now we got much more electronic stuff. You get my point here?
Well, it probably goes all the way back to fire. I mean, it's like the first cavemen were sitting around saying, why is Grog just sit around looking at the fire all the time? Look at him. He's useless. He's a fire addict. I forgot where I was going.
You were going good.
I was going somewhere. Not sure where.
Right. So it's just because something's new, it might get it might take the hit when it's really not. It depends on what we do with these things.
If I went out to dinner and there was three people at dinner reading books, yeah. I would be offended. I think that would be rude.
Yeah.
And
right.
Just like the family I saw where, you know, two kids were watching a movie on the little DVD player, and mm-hmm. then the older kids were on their smartphones, and mom mm-hmm. and dad were both mm-hmm. texting. Mm-hmm. There's like six people at a dinner table, and none of them are making eye contact at Applebee's on a Friday night.
I
don't know. It's, yeah, is it the technology or is it the book versus it's the taking away, it's the loss of relationships, it's the loss of connectedness mm-hmm. with people that I think creates the fundamental problem.
Okay, so we can look in on a family unbeknownst, and this family is everybody sitting in front of a TV set watching some, mindless program, and the next door neighbors, you look in at them and they're all reading a book. So what's the difference?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
They're not socializing, either one of them. We don't have as immediate of a negative stigma about the book.
I once worked with a kid.
Although it may depend on what kind of books they're reading, too, right?
I worked with a kid once that had to be part of the consequences for him was to not be able to read. Because he read as an escape. He got consequence. He's always able to read. And he loved to read, but then he started using it as an escape. And he would read for weeks. Hmm. To answer your question is it part of a balanced life where they also do other activities as a family? And,
So one little piece of the of the pie doesn't give you enough information.
You can't just look through somebody's window.
As you said, some people are doing these things to escape the things they should be doing, or pain or discomfort, or the fact that the relationships are not good and so forth. So they use these technologies to escape the situation.
A great question that I read was, is the internet addictive, or are addicts using the internet?
Right.
Right, and that really is because if we're depressed and anxious and we don't have friends and we can't go out and socialize and we find this like world that opens up to just consume time and get us out of our own lives and we escape into these fantasy worlds and games and pornography and, you know, Facebook, you reconnect with old people, you can hide in there forever.
What about you know, a lot of these issues come up from a parenting standpoint, what we should be telling our parents and trying to develop good children into, you know, productive adults. And the question is, what should we be doing at dinner time? And should we be playing video games and not talking? Should we be socially interacting? And obviously we've brought up the fact that if we're doing reading a book, playing baseball, playing a video game, texting, it doesn't make any difference. We're not socially engaged. How important is that aspect of this issue to for parents to understand? What's the importance of the socialization that we may be losing here?
Time, action, and passion is kind of what I think about when I talk to parents, and they talk about their kids and what they're doing. I say what it's going to take to help your child come out of this is your time, mm-hmm. devoting that time, taking action, becoming engaged with your child, and doing it in a passionate and intense way. And people, like the kids that I see that have the most problems with the internet stuff, their parents are just as bad. They're on the internet. They're watching TV. I tell parents all the time, I call it the 1 week, media free, or turn off the TV for a week. And the parents freak out. And the kids, they're like, oh, yeah, we could play games. We could do it. And the parents are like, well, what about the news? What am I going to do? The parents have more of a difficult time than the children. And the biggest thing for kids is to model the desired behavior. If you want your kids to be athletic, take them out and go exercise. If you want them to be compassionate and empathetic, volunteer. Go to Bean's Cafe, pick up garbage on the side of the road. All those things are super important. So that's, I think, what I would tell parents is model that behavior and engage with your children at a different level. And I think that's where a lot of the breakdown occurs.
You agree, Lori?
I think the culture of the family has definitely changed. We sometimes depend on those video games to babysit our kids, to sit in front of the TV so we can do the things we want. I think parents oftentimes are less involved and I think it's important to get back to that place we are involved. And it's more difficult now, too, because more families are required to work. Two parents are required to work versus one parent. So those are a lot of changes that I think we're struggling with. And the internet, the games are a quick, easy way to entertain our kids and let them be babysat for a while we do the things we used to do together. So it's kind of reconnecting and finding those things that are important to do as a family.
And it's not to say that using Care Bears as a babysitter is necessarily a bad thing, because I am guilty of that with my three children. But it's the difference is, are you doing it for an hour a day and allowing your kids to have some of that as a reward after they've done their chores and after they've had dinner or whatever it is? Or are you doing it 6 or 8 hours a day because you're depressed and you can't get out of bed and you can't function, and then you bring your kid to the counselor's office and say, fix my kid? It just doesn't work that way. And each parent knows the truth about their own situation and their own child and whether they're doing what they can for their child. And I think that's an important piece to be honest with yourself about.
Mm-hmm. I think your idea of being – your comment about being a role model is such a cogent one. I remember two comments about that is hearing about it is that kids, when they're growing up, there is no important role model in the world than the parents and what they see those parents doing. And it was brought to my attention in a second way at a meeting I went to about drug addiction. And the counselor was saying, he was talking about as he grew up, he watched his dad drink a beer and watch sports on TV, and that his whole thought was adulthood and growing up was to be like dad, where he could drink beers, I don't know, he didn't say smoke cigarettes, but he said drink beers. I was going to say and smoke cigarettes and sit in front of a TV. And so we have to remember is what I'm hearing you say is what we do is much more important oftentimes than what we're saying for our kids. And we need to remember that as parents.
Teens are very good at picking that up. They will come in our office very often and say, why should I do that if my parents don't?
Right.
So it's very right. common theme.
So how do you answer that question?
One kid said, I get all my weed from my dad.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, yeah. I mean, you get the problem. I
see. Right. Yeah.
And whether dad knows it or not is, that is relevant, but not really. I mean, it's the stuff in the home is so significant for these kids, and they grow up. Our children are going to be, for the most part, whoever we raise them to be. I believe that to be true. And, I'll see in about 20 years if that theory is true, because hopefully we do the best we can, but there's certainly ways to improve our parenting.
Carolyn has written an email to us, and it gets back to this issue of what we see on TV or screens and how it affects our behavior. And she says, I never understood why experts said that children could learn the alphabet or numbers or other educationally important concepts from Sesame Street, but did not learn violence from violent programming. How does this make sense? To me, it indicates it. I would say a couple of things. One, you certainly learn numbers and language and stuff much better from social interaction than any screen. That's been shown repetitively. Now, that doesn't answer a question specifically, but it also has to do with social norms and what's expected. I mean, we expect kids to learn numbers and so forth. We don't expect them to learn violence and so forth. And so, even though we're exposed to it, there are cultural controls on what we're picking up from the internet. That's how I would answer that kind of question.
Well, I guess I could add is there's rating systems for a reason, and as parents, we need to make sure we're using those rating systems and looking. You know, if it's rated child, it's child. If a movie's rated PG-13, there's a reason for that. And we need to help our kids understand why those things are there. So absolutely, people can probably learn violence from these games, but we need to make sure we teach them right and wrong and those morals as well. And as parents, we need to make sure we're monitoring what our kids are doing and what they're watching and what they're hearing.
To answer her question, I think absolutely what we allow to go into our children's brains will, you know, at a young age, will have significant impacts on what they believe and what they think. I mean, all the way from religion to violence to sexuality to compassion and empathy, it's what we teach them on a daily basis. And that teaching can come from many, many forms. And now I think part of the problem is that the control that we have over what our children see and learn is getting less and less. We're losing that ability to monitor what's going on because it is everywhere. I mean, kids lose their phones and they're like, all right, that's cool. Like, everybody's got a phone. They just go to their, you know, everybody's got an iPod or, you know, it's just, they're so connected. So we really don't have, we've lost a lot of control over what our kids are seeing.
And this raises another question that has been emailed in. It says, I have a question about MMO games. I'm not sure what that stands for. I have an idea. Facebook and the increase of online infidelity. So this socialization, what's happening, I think what I'm hearing here in this question is there's a lot more socialization going on in these games and books and FaceLine than is happens face to face, and is that good or bad?
Definitely can be, you know, good for those who struggle with, you know, Prentice shared an earlier example with someone that might have social anxiety and reaching out to meet someone where they weren't able to do that before. However, the issues that we're seeing is people aren't learning how to problem solve because they're not having face-to-face time. So if they end up having a conflict, you know, at the workplace someday later down the future, they don't know how to problem solve. They don't know how to communicate. They don't know how to interact because a lot of it's, you know, superficial fantasy role-playing or different personas behind the screen. So it can be good in some ways. And then again, back to it could be problematic.
Did the email mention infidelity, you said? And the impact of those sort of social networks?
It was kind of general. I just have a question about Facebook, MMO activities and infidelity and so forth. And so I don't know if the relationship, the question was more, do those drive infidelity more or contribute to infidelity more?
There's a significant problem with sort of old relationships getting rekindled through Facebook and, you know, old boyfriends and girlfriends getting in touch and then creating these sort of, I have a lot of like emotional affairs is what people call them when they come in the office. Like so-and-so is reconnected with their boyfriend from, you know, 1972. And now they are just sharing all their, you know, but that person lives in Miami, so it's safe.
Right.
You know what I mean? So yeah, there certainly are problems with that, but it goes back to what's wrong with the relationship. Is it the result of the Facebook, or is there something missing in the relationship that needs to be addressed so that wouldn't be sought out or follow through. Because, again, there's lots of people in successful relationships despite the presence of Facebook.
Okay. Maybe I have not given our number out, our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. Also, that'll get you to some links for the program today. Line1@alaskapublic.org. Our direct phone number is 550-8433, 550-8433. And our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. What I keep writing down as the conversation has gone on is balance and discipline issues, which seem to relate back to books and Ogar, who was just captivated by the fire and not doing anything else, and video
Grog.
Game Grog. I'm Grog, sorry, yes. I couldn't. The two guys look alike. Maybe they were twins. Yeah, we can't let these things we have to use them in a useful way, these technologies, and we can't let them control our lives. And then there's etiquette, which we haven't talked about. But are those the important principles, or a couple of the important principles to what we're discussing here today?
There's nothing wrong with having a beer, right? And I think but there is something wrong with having 12. On, you know, six nights in a row or six. So I think it's about balance. It's about using these technologies to accentuate and to make better our lives rather than to detract and control and take away from our lives. I think that's the important piece, because there is nothing inherently wrong with any of these things. It is our own mind that gets bogged down and sucked into different areas based on our own, I think, imbalance and lack of. And I mean, people with depression and anxiety are really susceptible to these things. I see it all the time.
Mm-hmm. So depression and anxiety is a predisposition. These are predisposing kinds of issues.
That's the debate, you know, it goes on and on. Is it addictive, or is it addicts using, or is it an escape, or is it people with anxiety and depression finding a place that feels good and takes them out of their own head and their own anxiety? I don't see a lot of people, and I was saying this to Lori earlier, that their only problem is that they spend excessive time on Facebook, that's the only thing in their world that's out of whack. It's usually there's a whole host of other things, health and relationship and maybe job. You know, seldom does anybody have just an internet porn problem, just that one thing. Mm-hmm. And then everything else in their life is balanced and great and wonderful. I mean, there's usually lots of things going on. And that's where talking to somebody and really sitting down with somebody and sort of ferreting out what's going on in your life, what is it that's missing, that is making these things so overly appealing and seductive.
Lisa, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi, I was just calling in reference to a comment made earlier in the discussion about how compulsive behavior was almost always negative. And workaholics were mentioned, but I would have to disagree with that, because I think this disconnect from parenting, when workaholics are involved, it's like that's been going on for decades, and that's actually applauded by our society. It's reinforced that, you know, with our strong work ethic, that, well, as long as you're doing work, it's okay to be, you know, alienated from your family.
Hmm.
Because you're doing something good.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I don't. If I understand what you're saying, is that, you know, workaholics, anything that takes away from a balanced life, in my own personal viewpoint, is something that can be dysfunctional and disruptive. And work, certainly, while it is lauded in our society and the old good Judeo-Christian work ethic is important, it can also get to the point where it's very destructive. I mean, the number of people that come into my office say that my dad was never home. He was always working, never had time for me. I hear that a lot. So it's balance is important. You can work hard and still have time for family and friends and exercise.
Right. Well, for somebody who has a computer-oriented job, is what I'm saying is that, you know, seen as, gosh, they just really work hard. And so it's excusable or understandable.
Well, if they're working the whole time. I mean, I don't know. It depends on how much they're working and what they're doing on the internet and if they're actually spending time. But finding balance. You can't spend 18 hours a day working on an internet-based business, and I don't think, and then call it balanced and have a family and social life and other things. It seems like that might be, in that sort of situation, an escape for whoever that is, or a way to sort of ignore the other problems of life, maybe.
I would agree. As having a workaholic father myself, yeah, I would agree.
Okay.
But like I said, it seems to me that if, you know, that's done, then, and it's work, then it's okay.
Yeah, certainly society views it that way. That there's acceptable addictions and unacceptable addictions. So, yeah,
right.
Work is more socially acceptable than gambling.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would agree, but...
But is the society the important one to decide that? Isn't the family more important to decide that? Is that okay with that individual family?
Right.
Is that causing that unbalance in that family and looking at that as an issue?
Okay, well, thanks for addressing that.
Yeah, thanks for your question, Lisa. We're in our last minute or two here. I like to sum up when I can with just some thoughts about the important things we want to have listeners come away from today. Lisa, do you have any thoughts that jump out that we want to make sure people remember about this program?
I think the biggest thing that we're just ending there is balance and moderation. It's really important that this can be really good. It gives good access to things. It's a good way to connect, but overuse can become problematic.
Yeah, and it also it seems it's different with each family. It's what makes this family unit work well. I mean, there are family units that seem very discombobulated to me that work just great, and vice versa.
Right.
Prentice?
As professionals, we have to be, I think, careful not to impose our own belief systems and our own values on other people and on their families. And, you know, I think like what Lori said is so important, what works for each individual. If I sit down with somebody in my office and I ask them, you know, how's your life? And they say, it's great. I don't have any problems. And they're using 8 hours of internet activity a day and they're really happy with it. Yeah, I mean, and they have friends and they are functioning and they wouldn't be in my office in the first place, but who am I to argue with how they spend their time? If it's working for them, you know, if they feel okay about it. It's when it becomes uncomfortable and people feel guilt and shame and they kind of hide it and sneak it and whatever it is, that's when it becomes something that I think needs to be addressed. And I think everybody knows that individually.
Thanks very much. We didn't bring up the whole issue of you got to get out and move every once in a while to keep that brain functioning well. We
Absolutely.
Now are learning more and more about the importance of exercise, so I have to stick that in there. Thanks very much to Lori Hickman and Prentice Pemberton of Bridges Counseling Connection here in Anchorage. You can continue this conversation on Facebook. You can find that at our website, alaskapublic.org. Why don't you join us in 2 weeks? That's the next time Line 1 will be back when we talk with Dr. Tina Thompson and Ursula Balthazar of Alaska Women's Clinic about menopause. That'll be Monday, June 11th. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for listening, especially to those who took the time to call and email today. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.